today, on July 6, 1976, we are interviewing Mr. Barney Votivka, who came to Hicksville with his parents in about 1905 and later became a leading farmer in this area. This interview is part of an oral history project of the Hicksville Public Library to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the library and the nation's bicentennial. Mr. Votivka, where did your family come from?
I come from New York City. And
Your parents weren't born in New York City, though, were they?
Not my parents. My parents are born in Bohemia, but I was born in New York City.
What year were you born, Mr.
Votivka?
1894. 1894, mm-hmm. And then where did you live? You went from New York City to where?
Out here to... Well, we call it Hicksville at the time because our mail come out of Hicksville. But it was really Locust Grove at that time. But today I think it's Syosset, and part of it is Hicksville.
And it's on Robbins Lane, is that, or did they go there later?
Robbins Lane, I didn't live too far away from Robbins Lane, on Miller Road. But I think Robbins Lane was Locust Grove at that time.
What was the Hicksville area like at the time you moved here? Do you
well,
remember?
Well, it was a nice country town. Not too many people. And everybody knew everybody.
Well, it was mostly a farming community, would you say?
I would say the surrounding country was farming, but the village itself had a diversified occupation. There was a lot of gold beaters.
Did you know any of them?
Yes, I knew most of them. And everybody had a little building in the back, and they'd done some gold beating. And there's quite a few places around town that have done it.
Well, how many people would you say lived here at the time?
Well, I wouldn't know. I imagine 500 the most.
Oh,
in fact, I think it was 350, somebody said that time.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, I don't know how far it went back, you know.
Well, what did the people mostly do here? Did they, you know, engage in farming?
Well, the outskirts was farming. And a lot of them in town done that silver beating, or gold beating. Some worked in the Heinz of Pickle Factory. We had a Heinz Pickle Factory here in town.
Where was that located?
That was just a little north of Hicksville, and I think there's a big tile place in there now.
On Broadway?
It's right on the railroad tracks.
Oh, I see.
Not far from Hicksville. And
wasn't there another pickle factory?
Well, there was
Heinz?
A lot of little ones, but
yeah,
some.
But Heinz was the big one.
But the Heinz was the biggest. And of course, a gold beating, I told you, was quite an industry.
Well, with the pickle factory, did the people of Hicksville mostly grow the
pickles and cabbage.
Oh, yeah.
And they would make sauerkraut out of that.
Yeah, sauerkraut and pickles. And a few worked there. And a percentage of the people in town worked for the Long Island Railroad. They used to go down to the Morris Park Railroad Yard. Mm-hmm. Quite a few, you know, commute back and forth.
That was in Jamaica, right?
It must have been outside of Jamaica somewhere, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, that's about the main something. Of course, a lot of people worked on farms.
Yes.
A lot of people worked on farms from the town. But those that worked out of town, why, was mostly them Morris.
And were they mostly German people?
I would say 75 to 90% of them, yes, mostly German descent.
What other people can you remember besides German people that were around?
Well, there was a few Irish, not too many. And but I would say 75% were German.
Well, what was your father's occupation? What did he do? Was he a farmer?
No, my father was a blacksmith by trade.
Uh-huh.
He was he come from a family of blacksmiths for generations. In fact, he had records. They made locks and hinges for pretty every castle in Europe.
Oh.
See, them days, different countries would ship the iron over to him, you know, with drawings of what they want made. And they made them in that factory. And his blacksmith shop was quite a generations old, you know. It was known all over Europe, mm-hmm. I was told.
It must have been if they sent yes. locks to be made.
Yeah, well, he made locks and hinges, and of course they built wagons and everything like that. They used to make their own plows and everything. And then when he came to this country, he went to work for Brewster and Company, which was a big carriage building for him. And he was with them for a good many years. Then when Brewster built a new building in Astoria, Long Island City, it was too much to commute from New York over there, so he went somewhere else. Then in the meantime, well, we moved out to Hicksville.
Did he commute from Hicksville? And
then he commuted, yes, every week. And
he didn't come home every night?
No, he commuted once a week.
But you bought land here so that you were farming at the same time?
Yes, well, when we moved, before we moved into Hicksville, I'll tell you how we got to Hicksville.
Okay. Yeah.
We knew a family that in New York by the name of Horak, H-O-R-A-K. They lived on Condiegue Road, and they moved out here because they had a big family. He was a tailor by trade. They moved out here because they had a big family, and New York was kind of rough getting along. And he invited us out. So we come out of Long Island Railroad, which was a big journey that time. He met us with a horse and wagon, and loaded us all up. Took it over to his house. Then he said his neighbor's got 15 acres of land on the other side of town, and he said it's the best land there is around Hicksville, and if he didn't have his, he'd buy it. So my mother went to look at it, and she bought it, 15 acres for $1,100. Of course, that was a lot of money. So in the meantime, we built a house on it for $1,000. And it's still there. And Chris Brengel built it, and he's an old timer in Hicksville. Long before we got in here.
Oh. And he built the house for you.
He built the house for $1,000, yes. And I gave it to my son.
And your son sold it. And you were sorry about that, weren't you?
Well, why didn't you become a blacksmith? What made you go into
He mining? Wanted me to be a blacksmith, but
he
I did. Couldn't see it.
No?
No, I couldn't see it. Because blacksmithing was getting to be a forgotten art, you know. Everything that was made by hand, it come out machine made, you know.
Oh.
A lot of this iron stuff they had to make by hand, why they made by drop forgings, which were much cheaper, and it answered the same purpose. And good blacksmithing is a trade that'll take you 15 years at least to learn. You ain't learned that one overnight. Blacksmithing.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And then, of course, in New York, he wanted me to start. I worked with him a little for a year or two, here and there. But I couldn't see it. Of course, the blacksmith them days were all down in the basement, you know, or else in the, and I couldn't take that air no more. You know, once you get used to smelling this country air, you couldn't take it, so I went home, and Martin Blyman came over, and he said, Martin, he said, I see you ain't doing nothing. He said, come on, give me a hand. So I helped him that summer, and next year I went in business for myself. That's how I got into farming.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
And
you started with how many acres, 15?
Well, I just don't know offhand, mm-hmm. but I probably had 15 or 20 acres, yes, mm-hmm. in the beginning, yes.
Did you farm it all by yourself, or did you have help?
Well, every now and then I had to get somebody to help.
Mm-hmm.
But them days, help was not a serious matter.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd done as much as I could myself, because I didn't have money enough to hire help. But I got along pretty good.
And what did you plant?
Well, mostly potatoes, corn, and cabbage.
Mm-hmm. Where did you take your produce to market somewhere?
Well, the first off, I started the Petal in the city of Glen Cove. I took a horse and a wagon and loaded up what I had, and I pedaled from house to house and to stores, and if I had any surplus, I took it to Brooklyn Wallabout Market. But for several years I'd done pedaling, and as I say, when I had too much, I took it to Wallabout
Market. Well, that was quite a drive into Wallabout Market,
horses,
wasn't it?
Horses, yeah. 14 hours sometimes, one way with a load, yeah.
14 hours?
Yeah, sometimes. It took me one, I remember one time it was a hot day. All day and all night.
Oh, that's it. No wonder they didn't.
Well, I didn't drive horses too long because. So.
You didn't drive horses too long? No.
Because it was too much of a trip.
Yes.
And when I could get enough money together to buy a truck, I did. Mm-hmm. I was one of the first ones to have a truck in the farm community.
Oh, really? Yes. What, did you expand your farm? I mean, you buy more acreage?
Well, I just rented more at a time. But when I was 23 years old, I bought the farm on Woodbury Road. Mm-hmm. And then I expanded quite a bit. Then I had World War I on my hands, and I farmed as much as I could because there's no trouble getting rid of your stuff. And of course, we were told to keep planting. That's what we need.
Did you drive into market yourself, or did you have someone drive in for you?
Well, I started myself, then I had someone driving for me. Mm-hmm. And
What did your neighbors think when you bought the first truck?
Well, the one neighbor says, "He's a crazy." He says he's gonna go broke.
didn't believe in progress, huh?
Well, he was just one of them kind, you know. But it wasn't long after he bought a truck, too.
I guess that ride into Wallabout with the horses was a little bit too long, right?
Oh, yeah, that was
what kind of a truck did you buy? Do you remember the name of it, the first
one? Yeah, I bought a Republic. I remember the name of it. And I got good use out of it. And I caught it for the neighbors and everybody. I got paid so much a trip. That time I was young, I was on the road day and night.
You could work hard.
But, it panned out all right. Mm-hmm. Panned out nicely, yeah.
When did you get married, Mr. Vitek?
I was 27 years old when I got married.
Mm-hmm. And whom did you marry?
I married a girl out of Jersey, the one I still got.
And how many children do you have?
I have five. I had five. I had four children, three boys and a girl. Mm-hmm.
And what are they doing today?
Well, my daughter passed away. She was the oldest. My oldest son farms upstate New York. My other son had a jewelry store in Huntington. And my youngest son is a dentist here in Hicksville.
Mm-hmm. And I understand a very good one.
Well, I hope.
How did you meet a girl from New Jersey? Hicksville boys didn't travel much,
well,
from what we understand.
I know it's a big story, but a friend of mine in Westbury, who I palled with, married a girl out of Long Island, out of Brooklyn. And when we were in the Wallabout Market, he used to say, "Come out with me, I'm keeping company with a girl down here." So I went with him. And then he married her, and at the wedding, my wife and her folks were there. And that was the beginning of what happened.
But you mentioned before that you built a house on your farm for $1,000. How many rooms were in a house?
There was five rooms in the house. Six rooms. Mm-hmm. There were three rooms upstairs and a summer kitchen, you know, was also attached to the house. Mm-hmm. And it's still there.
Do you have running water? No.
Well, we had a pump inside. We were more modern than the average. The others had to go outside to pump it. We had a cistern. And we had one in the summer kitchen with the old-fashioned... you had to prime them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
what's the address of that house today, if we wanted to look at?
Well, I don't know about the number exactly. I didn't know, but you know where Miller Road is. Mm-hmm. Well, you live Woodbury Road, you go down Miller Road, almost to the end, and you have to turn right.
Yes, that's right.
And the first turn to your left, there's a first house on your right side. The Jericho Water Works right next to it, and you can't miss the house because it's...
And there's a little industrial park across the street from it now, I think, where you make that turn. There's some factories in there. Right?
There's factories in there, yes. And GLF used to be there, but I think there's a
industrial
plastic
home for the blind is in there.
Could be. No, I think there's a plastic factory right across the street from my mother's place.
Where did you go to school?
I went to Hicksville School.
Hicksville School?
Yeah. Nicolai Street?
Nicolai Street, yes. I graduated in 1910 there.
How big was the graduating class, do you remember?
I think there was about a dozen of us. Not, I don't think any more. I think it was 12 of us, yes.
Are there any more of them still around?
Gosh, I don't know. I haven't come across too many. I just really wouldn't know. I don't think there's too many left.
I thought maybe somebody would be living in Hicksville.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Do you think that Hicksville had many opportunities to get ahead in those days?
Yes, I believe it had a future. Anybody wanted to work, mm-hmm. there was a lot of work around, and if you couldn't find enough around town, you could always go out of town.
Mm-hmm. But there was there many, many wealthy people here in town, do you recall?
Well, there was some that had a little more money than others, and they thought they were wealthy. And sometimes they showed it, you know, but they weren't as wealthy as I think they should have been, you know, or they were. But they were nice people. Of course, if anybody in them days had $1,000 in the bank, it was considered wealthy.
Well, how would you describe the community? Was it rich or poor or middling?
I think it was very conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knew everybody.
Well, who would you say ran the community? I mean, any of the leading citizens that we have?
Yes, I believe there's always a few, yes, that really there was a minister and he became a judge, Heber, and then the Fassbenders were all here quite a good many years, and the Stoltzes had butcher shops and they were old timers, mm-hmm. and they were the pillars of the neighborhood, you would call, you know.
Mm-hmm. You remember Dr. Curtis?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I remember Dr. Curtis before he got into Hicksville. I mean, I know of him before he established Hicksville.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yes, sure. When he first came to Hicksville, he went up above, you know, where Wayland Drugstore is now?
Yes.
Right upstairs where he was.
Mm-hmm.
He started there, and then he married a girl out of Hicksville.
Oh.
She was a Voight.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a mill in right where the Catholic church is.
I see.
There was a mill there, and Charlie Voight was, and this he was, there was brother and sister, that the only two I think was in the family, and he used to go out with her, and mm-hmm. he married her.
I see. Do you think the people in Hicksville travel very much?
I don't think so. Just from neighborhood to neighborhood at that time. Unless you had a good bicycle, and not too many had them.
Well, in those days, then, there was big estates on the North Shore.
The North Shore was
really wealthy people.
Really, really.
Millionaires.
Yes.
They came down to Hicksville occasionally to do business, didn't they?
Well, the Underhills were considered pretty well off, and they used to come to Hicksville to do business. And
Theodore Roosevelt, didn't they come once in a while?
No, I don't think so.
We heard stories about, you know, that to the effect that he occasionally came in.
Well, if he did, I didn't come across him.
Do you remember traveling by train, your first train ride? Did you ever, you know, take a train ride?
Yes, we would come out on train from New York. And then, of course, when I worked a little bit in the city, I took the train in, stayed all week, and went to night school every night, you know, to study.
All the way in the city?
In the city, yeah. We finally finished, had a little apartment, and me and my brother and my father, we stayed in the apartment, and we had trade schools, and my brother learned drafting of automobile designing. And he stuck to it, and he went to Detroit. And I took it up to some extent, but I didn't finish up because I went farming.
But going to night school, that was something then, huh?
Well, them days, there was a lot of good night schools.
They were mostly trade schools, weren't they? There wasn't college at night like there is now.
There wasn't what?
There wasn't college at night. There were mostly trade schools.
Well, there was a lot of trade schools, yes, but you see, the drafting school was supported by the automobile industry donations. Because they were needed draftsmen, yes.
There was a place in town called the Model Farms. Do you remember that?
Well, that was right in back of the east of the Woodbury Road and south of the Minna Hill Road. There was a settlement in there that they called Model Farms. It belonged to a family by the name of Model that lived on Woodbury Road. They owned that property. And they cut up into a settlement, and there was a lot of Puerto Ricans moving there, and very fine Puerto Ricans. They worked in the neighborhood, and they were very nice people, and were predominantly Puerto Rican. Mm-hmm. But if anybody didn't know what a Puerto Rican was, why, you wouldn't say they were Puerto Rican, because they were very nice people. And they changed the name after that. An Irishman had a grocery store up there. And some of his relatives had come to see him. And finally, this Irishman's daughter married a Puerto Rican. So when they come to Garrity's store, they see a Puerto Rican come in there. And Mr. Garrity said, "Go back to Spick Hill." The guy said, "No more Spick Hill, Irish Hill." I mean, you know, I had to put that all in there, you know. Cut out what you want. I got a kick out of that one. Well, Garrity, he was the only, he opened up a store up there. He done good up there. You know, the people liked him.
Were there Ukrainian people down on Jerusalem Avenue? You said there were some farms on Jerusalem Avenue down this way?
There was, you mean, farmers, Ukrainian? Mm-hmm. Not that I know of, no. Mostly were Polish farmers. I don't know of anybody that was Ukrainian. The Ukrainians worked on farms.
Oh, they worked on the farms.
They worked, right. A lot of them worked on farms, but mostly the Polish got into the farm by themselves.
What did they grow? Did they grow the potatoes?
They grew the same thing anybody else grew, and they were good farmers. Mm-hmm. In fact, they kind of outpaced all the others.
Really?
They got to be big farmers, and
they're the only big farmers left on Long Island.
And
today.
I think they do most of the farming on Long Island, yes. Mm-hmm.
At least most.
You got room?
Well, Mr. Vitipka, we know that you were a great wrestler in your day.
Well, I don't know if I was great, but I done some of it.
Could you tell us something about that?
Well, I done it for a sideline. In fact, somebody from the city had a gymnasium, and he thought I would like it. So I went down and done a little of it, and a little more, and a little more. And then I turned professional, and I went with a group of World War II overseas in the USO. Then when I come back, I retired.
Well, how long were you overseas?
6 months.
6 months? Yeah. And you went to the different camps?
I went from New York
countries
to Bermuda, from Bermuda to the Azores, from the Azores to Casablanca, and all through the North African campaign. And then from Cairo, I flew into Rome with the group. Mm-hmm. And we were in Italy a few months. And then we come back by boat. We flew over in a short while, but come back by boat. It took us 10 days to get back. 2 days in the Mediterranean, 8 days in the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Dodging submarines?
No, war was over.
War was over. Well, you must have been about 50 years old then.
I was 50 years old.
You must have taken real good care of yourself.
Well.
Did you constantly keep working out in a gym or something?
Well, no, we had quite a bit of activity. Once in a while, you wrestle in camp, you had to take on one of these GIs, you know, mm-hmm. in front of their audience. And of course, we never made them look bad.
No, but you must have kept, before the war, though, you must have kept in very good shape.
Oh, I always kept in good shape. I didn't smoke, didn't drink. And I worked.
You worked hard.
I was just going to say, on the farm kept
you
in trim.
Yeah, and I always worked, yes. I was always in good shape.
Did you win any medals or any cups or something?
Well, I won a lot of medals and cups, but I wasn't after that. After a while, I wanted to get a little cash out of it, which I did.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. I wrestled all over the United States.
Oh, you did?
I've been in Canada, Mexico. Well,
you've traveled quite extensively then, haven't you?
Yeah, it was always a 3-4 day trip or something like that. I never stayed away too long, you know.
But you always came back to Hicksville.
Well, I had a wife here.
Well, did you find the other, you know, the other countries very appealing as far as would you like to live there? Or?
Well, I don't say I would like to live there, but they were very nice. I mean, mm-hmm. all the place we were, very nice, except in the African part, well, them Arabs were treacherous. You had to watch yourself there. And but when we got into Europe, why, they were very nice people. And I always said, if you want a good dish of macaroni, you got to come to the United States. Of course, somebody said that the Germans, when they went to Italy, they took all the macaroni and the tomato paste away from you. Know? If it's true or not, I don't know. But I found very nice people up there. Mm-hmm.
When you were a boy, did people get to the beach as much here? Now, it's a big thing today to go to the beach, but we wanted.
You got that on? Well, the only we went swimming in the East River.
And then when you came to Hicksville, why?
And then when we come to Hicksville, why, the only place we went was Laurelton. We went there with horse and wagon, and it was wonderful then.
And that's where now?
That's right next to Oyster Bay. Between Oyster Bay and Cold Spring, Laurelton Harbor.
Laurel, I think it's called Laurel Hollow now, isn't it?
No, Laurel Hollow is out of it's south of Oyster Bay. I think a lot of colored people live there. Huh? But Laurelton at that time was an incorporated village. They had their own protection. And at Laurelton there at the harbor where we used to go swimming, Tiffany had his estate. It had a big high Tiffany clock up in the top mm-hmm. there, you know. And
this was Louis Tiffany, I think.
I think it was a Tiffany estate. Mm-hmm. I don't know who it was, I don't know. But them days the water was good compared to New York City. New York City had all the garbage going right in. It was floating all over, you know. Mm-hmm. Jeez, I tell you. And when you start to think of it, you know, we swam in that down water, you know. Jeez.
Were there any newspapers in town, you know, that you can recall?
There was none printed in town outside the one that come out of Huntington. They called it the Long Islander. And that was mostly circulated around. I mean, in the early days. Mm-hmm. Later on, they did get something else. Mm-hmm. But the original paper was the Long Islander. And it was very good. It gave a good story about all towns. And it was printed in Huntington.
Mm-hmm. That paper was established by Walt Whitman, the poet.
Yeah.
He started Walt, that.
Yeah, yeah.
But long before your time.
Yeah, I imagine so.
Was there any other language spoken besides English in town here?
Well, a lot of the older timers used to speak German, and that was about it. Mm-hmm. But then it kind of petered away because the older people, you know, the children went to school, they spoke English after a while.
Mm-hmm. Did you learn any Bohemian at home?
My folks spoke Bohemian home, and when I was in the city, I went to school, a Catholic school, and you had it. They taught you Bohemian, see, because that church was
Bohemian,
mostly Bohemian, yeah.
And they must have had sisters from Bohemian.
Oh yeah, they had all. Well, no, they had. I don't know if they come from Bohemian, but I mean they had sisters who could speak it, yes. And all the priests were mostly Bohemian, could speak German. Although they had man one day, the head of the church was he had a German name. Whether he was, I think he was part German, you know.
How about the religious groups in Hicksville here? Do you know, can you name
why,
some of them?
You mean name any of them?
Well, you know, the different...
Well, you had the Catholic Church, and you had the Methodist, and you had the Lutheran, and I don't know of any others.
Well, the population was largely Catholic, though, wasn't it?
Mostly, yes. Yes, mostly.
Do you remember the priest that was down at St. Ignatius at that time?
Yes. Father Fox.
Oh, Father Fox.
Fuchs.
Oh, Fuchs.
Yeah.
Did he speak German?
Oh, yes, yes. He had a German man. The first man was German, them days.
Did they have any social activities, you know, within the church at that time?
Well, not too much, because they didn't have no buildings other than certain church meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I come here before they built the school. There's an old school on Broadway that wasn't there when I first come here.
Mm-hmm.
And the only school I think was in Hicksville was a public school on Nikolai Street. Then shortly after, they built that Catholic school there.
What did people do for medical care?
Well, most of them, they knew how to take care of themselves.
They had home remedies?
They had home remedies, yes.
But do you remember any of them?
Well, when it comes to and a good shot of rum, and put you to bed. We had feather beds them days, we didn't have steam heat. And she made sure you sweat, and she watched you all night that you wouldn't throw it off.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you, it broke a cold.
How about mustard plasters?
We used mustard plaster for a sore throat.
What was a mustard plaster? What was it made of?
It made out of dry mustard, and they put it on cloth, and they slapped it right on you.
On your chest.
Right. That's if you had a chest cold. Yeah. And it was hot.
Do you remember, you know, about the doctors in town? I guess there weren't too many at that time.
Well, there was two when we first come to Hicksville. There was a Dr. Rave and a Dr. Heidemann. That's the only two.
Those were the days they made house calls, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Horse and buggy?
Originally, mm-hmm. Yes. Then, of course, they got automobile. Dr. Heidemann, he got a two-cylinder Maxwell. Had it cranked on the side. And Rave, after a while, got one too. What he had, I don't know.
What did people do for amusement in this, in the town?
Well, the main sport for all the people was baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And they had two teams. They had a regular Hicksville Athletic Club and Hicksville Juniors. There were two teams. And the games were always very competitive. They were, and Westbury and Hicksville were the worst ones, you know. They used to go all out. And it was always a good game.
Did you play on the
No, I didn't.
Oh,
no,
you didn't.
No, I never played baseball.
You were a spectator.
A spectator. Well, at that time I was a little younger too. And in winter time it was football. And Westbury and Hicksville always had a tight rivalry, yes. And it was good, fair sport, and they all were out to win.
And this kept the whole town came.
Oh, it was always a whole crowd there. Yeah, between, of course, most time the Hicksville, the both clubs played ball, all outside teams against. And everyone had their favorites, and it was always a good crowd.
Plenty of excitement.
Oh, yes, yes. And sometimes a fight, too, you know.
Well, one of the things we understand that was an interest of almost everyone in the early days was aviation. I guess maybe it wasn't just Hicksville, maybe it was all over, because aviation was new and people were fascinated by it. What do you remember about that?
Well, the only thing I can remember was before the war, before World War One, on Miller Road, somebody was building a plane. Then when they used to have a place down in Mineola, fairgrounds, they had competitive planes down there. I used to go down and see them once in a while. And then when I had a sort of a race in Belmont Park, I managed to get down there to see that. And they were one of the first planes around, especially that one that we picked care of, Wright Brothers. And they were just as about the way he originally made them. They had the rudder in the front and the motors, in the back, the propeller, they were pushers. And down Belmont Park, the first one that I seen that was a puller was a Frenchman named Blériot. And his was a monoplane, all the rest were biplanes. And that was about as nice a plane, flew gracefully, like a bird. And had seemed to had something like silk wings. And he flew it around very smoothly. It was well handled. And I thought it was one of the greatest there was. And I understand he flew the English Channel with one shortly after.
And you said you saw Glenn Curtis work one time?
Yeah, I watched him putting his together. And
that was at Mineola at the fairgrounds?
That was also by the fairgrounds there, yes. I watched him. His was a biplane at the time.
And he won some kind of money flying to Albany?
And I understand the hoist papers offered a certain amount so when he went to fly from New York City to Albany. And he'd done it, and it was quite a reward, whatever it was, I don't know.
But it was money, and he needed it to build his planes.
Oh, yeah, they all need it, yes.
And during World War I, we understand that there were pilots that were being trained down here on the fields on Lower Jerusalem Avenue.
Oh, that could be, I don't know exactly, yeah. They trained them all over, I think, yeah.
Do you remember the Hicksville Air Club that was down on Spindle Road?
Yes, I know of them, but I was never connected with them. Yes, I remember they had an air club, yes.
Well, how about the Mineola Fair? You mentioned something about the Mineola Fair. That was a big amusement, wasn't it?
Oh, that was
a special event.
That was a yearly special event, yes, and it was well attended. And of course, at that time, everybody was interested in it. They had cattle and every kind of living animal produced. And the man that owned my farm, what I got in right now, the house I live in right now, his name was Richard C. Collier. He dates back to the Hollanders. And he's the first man to exhibit registered Holstein cattle at the farm, at the fair.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy.
And did you send in produce to the
fair? Why, if I had something they wanted, you know, we always belong to Farm Bureau or something like that, and they want some kind of exhibit, so if I had something, I gave it to them. But I never had any cattle put up there.
Did you have cattle at all?
Well, I had horses at that time, and we had to have them.
You never had cows?
Yeah, we had cows too. No, just enough for us, for a household, yes.
Well, didn't they have some kind of races at the fair also? Some kind of, was it stock car races or?
Oh, no, they had horse races.
Oh, horse races.
All kinds of horse races, okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. They had car races later on, but I'm going way back when,
yes.
Before cars were really in there. They had horse races and they had plow contests and, you know, such things, or pulling contests with a team of horses or something like that.
They have any of those log splitting contests?
Yes, they had men that could chop a log in a certain length of time, and they demonstrated that. In fact, they let everybody else compete with this man, but this guy was an exploit.
Didn't you go and participate in anything?
Nothing like that. No.
Uh-huh.
No.
The house you live in now, Mr. Vitipka, dates back quite far in history, doesn't it?
Well, when I bought it, it was the house itself is 100 years old. But when I bought the property, it belonged to Richard C. Collier, Richard Charles Collier. And he's of Dutch descent. The property was in his possession 103 years when I bought most of it. And I had it for 50 years.
Now, where is this located?
It's 863 Woodbury Road, right on the end of Minetta Hill Road and Woodbury Road.
What's that?
It's between South Oyster Bay Road and Jericho Turnpike, just about in the middle.
And your son, he also has a home that is quite historical.
Well, my son owns a house on Jericho Turnpike. Number is 8595. He's right next to the Woodbury Nursing Home. And he bought it 25 years ago. And he's in there 25 years. And it was 103 years old when he bought it. It was originally belonged to the Gilmore. And there's a, he found a book about the Gilmore people. And Gilmore was a general in the Northern Army in the Civil War.
Oh, that's interesting.
He came home to Woodbury.
Well, wherever he went to, I don't know who the Gilmore is, but Mrs. Gilmore, who my son bought the property from, she went to North Carolina and she had some friends down there that bought some nice homes, probably, and she sold it to my son.
Mm-hmm. Is it a very large house?
Very large, yes. It's mm-hmm. three stories, has eight fireplaces.
Is this John?
That's
Alfred. Is that your son John? Oh, Alfred.
Alfred, yes. Mm-hmm. Alfred. And there's four fireplaces upstairs and four fireplaces downstairs. Because them days they didn't have steam heat or anything, so they had a fireplace and there was plenty of wood around. Mm-hmm. And he still retains the principle of the house.
Mm-hmm. You must have a few grandchildren around too.
I got 10 of them around.
You have 10 grandchildren? Yeah. Any of them live around you here?
Well, they're all, well, my youngest son has three of them. Mm-hmm. And John has two of them. And the rest are upstate New York.
Were you predominantly girls or boys?
Half and half.
Oh, five and five?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Half and half, yeah.
And you spend a lot of, you spend the winters in Florida now?
Well, now I've been staying in Florida for the winter months.
Where do you go in Florida?
I go to Dania, city of Dania. It's right in between Hollywood and Fort Lauderdale.
And then you come back up here for the summer?
I come here for the summer. I still live in my house. I have a tenant that watches it while we're gone.
Mr. Vitipka, do you remember any of the big snowstorms or hurricanes we had?
Well, here sometime in the early 30s. It all happened in March. I well remember the month. Woodbury Road was blocked. It just was as high as they could pile it in there. And nobody could get through it. They finally, we shoveled it with all the neighbors and we just got nicely opened up. And the next day we got another snowstorm, filled up everything we opened. In fact, we got more of it. So then we opened that one up a couple of days later. It wasn't a couple of days after that, it filled up once more. And then we finally made up our mind. If the Lord put it there, let the Lord take it away, and he did.
He sent the spring for us?
Summer, yeah. Summer came eventually.
Oh, I didn't come out yet. It run right down the roads.
Do you think that the winters seemed a little longer those days and were more severe? A lot of people say that.
Well, I thought they would be, yes, because, well, I tell you why they appeared that way. I think we had no way of getting out any easier, you know? So you imagine you was, today if it snows, they open them up and the next day. But I think on the average, they were about the same.
Well, I think too, also, that there were, you know, there were no houses around. The wind just took the snow and blew it.
Yeah.
It got big bags, you know.
And we had rips, there's no doubt about that.
Well, how about the Depression? Did the Depression have any effects on your farm?
The Depression had a lot of effect on my farm. In fact, I lost a good portion of it. And all my neighbors lost theirs too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. A lot of people
yeah.
did.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The Looney and the Wolfers, mm-hmm. they all lost their farms. And the wood operators too, you know.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You said taxes were very high on the farms.
Well.
Way back in the Depression.
Yeah.
You were paying high taxes.
Yeah, I was paying about $3.50 an acre until the Depression come along. And then they raised me up to $50 an acre overnight. And I held out as long as I could, and I finally wound up with $360 an acre.
You couldn't make $360 on it.
And you couldn't sell the stuff either. You couldn't sell nothing, you know. All the vegetables were cheap. But they had reasons for it. Was that one? Come up.
Well, what did you do then once you, you know, the farm?
Well, then they foreclosed. Mm-hmm. So I lost them.
Yeah. Then what did you do then?
Well, I went out working in the construction line. I salvaged the house that I'm living in and a piece of ground. And I got along.
Mm-hmm. Well, you went into construction then, didn't
you? I worked for a construction outfit after that, yes. Mm-hmm. I worked for there quite a few years.
In what capacity did you?
Well, I was labor foreman most of the time. Mm-hmm. And I done well. They paid good wages, and I got a pension. And they have hospitalization. Them days, you didn't have Medicare, so the union paid for everything. So they were good to mm-hmm. me. I mean, I don't know if all unions are that good, but ours was very good.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about, do you remember Armistice Day?
Yes, I do. There was a lot of noise like there would be all over. Mm-hmm. And everyone, the whistles were blowing, and everybody had a tin can, he used it. Mm-hmm. And they used guns and everything, yes, to make noise, quite a time.
Well, everybody was just happy it was over.
Oh, yes, surely.
Do you remember Pearl Harbor Day, when it all started over again?
Yes, I remember Pearl Harbor, yes. I remember when the report come, and saw pictures of it. But I tell you, I was surprised. I didn't think the American public took it too hard at the time, you know. Nobody seemed to give the plow up for a sword. That's the way it appeared to me. But eventually he all went in.
Mr. Vitipka, being a farmer, you would know something about the nematode, which was so predominant during the 40s.
Yeah, well, I was connected with the Farm Bureau all them years, and there was something about potatoes, that they weren't thriving so well, but they never knew exactly what it was. But there was a piece of land south of southern part of Hicksville, and the man put cabbage on half of it and potatoes on the other half. Well, the potatoes didn't do good. So the next year he put potatoes on a cabbage ground and cabbage on a potato ground, and it done all right. So he figured that must be the cabbage is good for the ground. They didn't then yet know that it was a nematode. So I think the Department of Agriculture finally started digging into it, and they found a nematode was responsible for the potatoes not doing too well. And I think we must add nematode a good many years, because for Mineola, around Mineola, they used to grow a lot of potatoes. But they couldn't grow late potatoes because they never matured properly. Mm-hmm. But the early ones done pretty well. And they never knew why. They thought the potato ground was getting run out of potato usefulness, till they found out with the nematode was responsible. Because a late potato has a longer season, and the nematodes have a longer season to work on them. So when the Department of Agriculture located a nematode that was right here, South Hicksville here, I think a man by the name of Gilweiler farmed land, and I think it was through him that they found it. And then once they found nematode and they knew what it was, then they started to quarantine land. And most of that stuff with Levittown was more or less quarantined. They tried putting everything to kill them. They used a chemical. And of course that was quite costly. And then they figured that the only thing they could do was leave the ground lay for a year or two. And of course a man had to pay taxes, he couldn't afford it. And
they didn't forgive him any taxes while he was
No, taxes was a different subject, you know. They figured the Department of Agriculture should have paid him, and nobody wanted to pay. But regardless of that, they found out what nematode was. And of course they started doing a lot of quarantine of land, because potatoes, they figured, is a poor man's product. And they wanted to solve that. So they built a place in Hicksville. You had to wash the potatoes in hot water before you could ship them. They thought they could arrest them that way. So they tried everything till they come to a final solution where if you keep the potatoes off the ground, the nematode dies a natural death. And what they done from there on, I don't know, but they made it kind of bad for a lot of people to farm on. And I think that's where Levittown, why that land got to be too reasonable, very reasonable. Mm-hmm. I understand some of that land only brought $200 an acre.
Mm-hmm. Well, what exactly was nematode, do you know?
Well, I just don't know what it looks like or anything, but it's a parasite of some type. And it sticks to the root, and it devours it eventually. But they could never find it exactly, you know, but evidently they did in time. And I know it's a farm right next to me, they use some kind of chemicals to put it in the ground, you know, with a subsoil like, you know, and put it in. And you weren't allowed to plant potatoes on it 1 year. So they tried everything, but I think they got it pretty well solved now. Mm-hmm. They put something even in fertilizer that killed the nematode.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I imagine they got it pretty well licked.
Well, then that was the start of Levittown, right? These farmers going off the land.
They couldn't farm it the way they wanted to. And of course, when they had a chance to sell, they was willing to sell. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people says that Levitt took advantage of nematode, but I don't think so.
Did you think that it was good for Hicksville, to progress, with all this, all these new homes and families coming into the area?
Well, I'm never against progress. People had to live somewheres. I think we had a nice community where we didn't have so many people. But everybody has a right to live somewhere, so they come out the way we did too. We wanted to get out of the city, and I guess they wanted to do the same thing. So it was pretty hard to say anything against it. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they just spoiled the community. They just come here to live, and we had some good neighbors, we had some bad ones, that's mm-hmm. all.
Well, I think it was just that Hicksville wasn't ready for it at the time.
Well, it's possible.
Well, as far as schools and...
Well, that's the whole thing. You see, they couldn't build schools fast enough, mm-hmm. and they cost money to build. But as I say, you can't stop progress, you know. You can't blame the people for coming out. And Levitt put up a cheap home, and I think he done a lot for people that couldn't afford a better one. Mm-hmm. In fact, he done well for everybody.
Well, he did put up good homes. I mean,
he was quite progressive.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
And of course, today many of the homes are not. They don't look like the original anymore. They've been added on to, and they
redecorated them and made them look a little fancier or something like that.
Yeah.
And then the shrubbery grew up and made it look a little better.
And they might bring about four times the original price. They're not quite 30 years old.
Mm-hmm. I think they're close to five times.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, they lasted in spite of all the doom that was predicted. Do you think Hicksville would have fared better as far as planning was concerned, that you wouldn't have lost downtown Hicksville if Hicksville had we have heard people say that if it had been an incorporated village, they would have had more political influence so that they could have kept the downtown area of Hicksville the way it more or less
well,
intact.
That I don't know too much about, but I'm no politician. But I'll say one thing, they solved a little, especially these years sumps, you know. I remember when they first put a cesspool in every corner on the street. See, a dry well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it only lasted a year, they were plugged. I mean, you know, the tar and the... So then, wherever they got the idea, I guess somewhere from somewhere, they put these open sumps, you know, what we got now. Mm-hmm. Okay, and every development has to allow donate a piece of land for a sump,
mm-hmm.
which they did. I got one alongside of my house. But see, they're open sumps.
They catch the extra rainwater.
They catch all the rainwater. And if there's any residue left on the bottom, they bring in a bulldozer and they scrape it off and cart it away, you know, like.
Oh.
See, where the others, they couldn't get in there, they'd mm-hmm. scrape it out. And I understand your water level on Long Island is just as good now, better now than it ever was.
Well, according to the newspapers, it's supposed to be going down all the time, and it's supposed to be a dangerous situation. You don't think so?
Well, one time I heard your water level was higher than it ever was. Now, if maybe some dry spells, you would get some of it. I imagine if we don't get much rain. But I haven't read nothing in the paper about we're getting a lower level. Of course, we're using more water, too.
Oh, yes.
Well, can you say, Mr. Vitipka, did you enjoy life in the good old days?
Oh, yes, I did. You didn't have too much chance to get away from town too much. And we had good entertainment between ourselves. We got along very nicely.
So you can say your years in Hicksville were good ones?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, I have nothing against Hicksville. My mother thought it was the best spot in the world.
Well, you're still here, so I guess right. You like it too.
I do.
Even though you run away 6 months of the year.
Well, it gets cold.
Yeah, well.
And the bones get so they don't like the cold.
Right. Well, the reason why I went to Florida, I've been shoveling enough snow every winter. And I thought it's about time I quit.
Good. Well, we want to thank you, Mr. Vitipka, Mrs. Minogue, on behalf of Mrs. Minogue and Mr. Barnes and myself, for a very enjoyable interview and taking us back in the history of Hicksville. We enjoyed it very much.
Well, I was glad to come here to tell you what I know.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.